kids.
Dr. Carlos Laverne, a medical director at the new Center for Advanced Orthopedics at Larkin Hospital, is Miami-Dade's only surgeon performing robotic makoplasty hip replacement, designed to greatly increase precision and reduce trauma. For more information, call 855-760-0777.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Thursday. And today we begin with insights about raising a special needs child. In the studio are Sandy and Mark Horowitz to share their experiences and give advice. They've written a book called I Wish I Knew Then What I Know Now, A Guide for Special Needs Parents. Thank you both for coming in for this discussion.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. So we'll start with you, Sandy. You've had an arduous journey these past 14 years. Just tell us about Ian and how and when you first learned that he did have special needs.
Well, Ian is 14 years old now. He was 12 when we wrote the book. And he is... He's a great kid. He's in seventh grade in public school. He's generally pretty happy-go-lucky, but he's had a rough time with learning not only just, you know, the 3 hours at school, but also just life skills, just doing normal things that most kids can do. He walks, he talks, he does. He doesn't look disabled.
Which you said sometimes works against him.
Sometimes it does. Yeah, he, the other day in the supermarket, for example, he, someone wanted to pass him and he didn't really understand it. And so the man, well, it was an elderly man, he wound up pushing past him in the supermarket. And Ian was just like, what's that? Ian was completely astonished about it all, and the man was grumbling, like he's just, oh, just some inconsiderate kid, and it was totally just because he wasn't perceiving the social situation.
Right.
So,
and when did you first know that he did have special needs? How old was he?
He was about 5 months old, and I noticed that his the soft spot in his head, the fontanelle, was a little raised. So we took him to the doctor, and it was normal. And the doctor, luckily, believed me and did an ultrasound, and it indicated some problems. And ultimately, we wound up with at the neurologist with a diagnosis of hypoplasia of the corpus callosum.
Tell us more
and
about that.
Benign hydrocephalus, too.
Tell us more about that, Mark.
Okay. The corpus callosum is the neural network between the two halves of the brain, and that's where the communication between the two halves takes place. And in his case, his is a little bit thinner. So he's actually, there's some neural pathways that are not there at all, and there are some that may just be connecting. So where, you know, I could ask you a question, so, you know, let's use math as an example. I could ask you 2 + 2, and you'll immediately say 4. You know, Ian will have to think about it, and he may get it, and then 10 minutes later, he may forget it, and he may say the answer is 8. But with repetition, you can build these, we call it building bridges. You know, he likes that metaphor for what we're actually doing with the brain exercises that we're doing.
Tell that story about the canoe. That's kind of a good example.
Yeah, that's a very good example. The first time we went canoeing and Ian actually had to do something was on a Cub Scout trip. And Ian was in the front of the canoe, and we're paddling around, and I said to Ian, I said, Ian, switch sides. And he lifts up the paddle, and I'm seeing him from behind. I can't see his face. He lifts up the paddle, and he just freezes, and he doesn't know what to do. And it's like, all right, let's try this again. Ian, switch sides. And this next time he brings it up a little higher, and he stops right in front of him. To make a long story short, I ended up having to give him very explicit instructions on how to switch the canoe paddle from one side of the canoe to the other. Now he canoes, and there's not a problem because we've been practicing that, and he understands what it means. You know, another good example is when he would take school pictures. And when he would take these school pictures, you know, he'd get this, like, they would say smile, and he'd get this really toothy, grimacy kind of smile. And then one day I said, Ian, don't smile, laugh. And from that point on, he would be laughing when he took pictures, and we'd get great smiles from him.
Tell us about some of the difficulties you had at first. You were flooded with acronyms and a maze of options, and I'm sure there's insurance questions. And you also talk about it's very important to be keeping important record management.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if everything is typical, you know, your financial records that you that you're generally going to keep are going to be somewhat limited to, you know, what you need for taxes. But now your records, you may have to keep utility bills, because you may be applying for financial assistance. And when you get this financial assistance, they ask for, you know, just about everything, you know, to make sure, especially if you're applying to a private school and you're getting financial help.
Excuse me for butting in.
No.
You have to keep your school records and medical records really straight, because you need to know that. You get another doctor, you get another teacher, another social worker. You need to have what you need and be able to find it so that you can say, hey, this is what we need and this is why.
Going back just for a moment, 13 and a half years ago, you said you looked for information to guide you and you were unable to find any, which I find kind of surprising considering the numbers of special needs children. Why do you think that was?
Well, at the time, we were looking for specific things about corpus callosum, and we didn't find very much. We also weren't very good at doing internet research. The search engines have improved since then. And I just was kind of clueless. I just really didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and a lot of it had to do with changes in internet technology. A lot of what we were finding online were forums. And in a lot of cases, the forums talk about worst case scenarios. So we would be researching the hypoplasia of the corpus callosum. We were also told that Ian, this is a direct quote from the neurologist, was a little floppy. And we're like, what does that mean? You know, but I got online and I did a search for floppy babies, and it actually came up, and it was loose muscle tone. So again, we looked in the forums, and we either found stuff that was very technical, which was above us, or we found these forums where people talked about the worst case scenarios. And they were talking about kids who had such cases of hypotonia, they were 7 years old and taking their first step. Or they had feeding tubes and the parents were dealing with that. Mm-hmm. And we just felt very lucky that Ian was not that severe at that time. He wasn't walking yet, but he was moving around and crawling, so that wasn't going to be the issue.
Now, you tried private school with Ian, and you found that you prefer having him in public school. What's the reaction to his classmates? Or do they tease him or bully him?
Overall, they're very good. There are some
kids can be very cruel.
Yeah, they can be, and I've been hammering that into Ian for a very long time. That people will try and dare him to do stuff that he shouldn't do.
And it's happened.
But I tell him to stop and think about it, and is this in my best interest? Now, whether or not he actually can make that judgment or not, but at least he'll stop and think.
Like,
about
what sort
it.
Of things are, do you mean?
Well. I can't remember what grade he was in, but it was an elementary school, and they weren't allowed to go outside the fence at recess. But we got a phone call. Ian was found outside the fence. Some kids had told him to go out there, dared him to go out there, and he knew he wasn't supposed to go out there, but because he seemed to believe that these other children had authority over him, that he had to go out there, and then he got in trouble. But he never really told on anyone else for leading him into these situations. It was really something, because that happened a number of times.
Yeah, and there was another situation where he was convinced to hug a girl, and he got in trouble for that as well.
So how did you decide between private school and public school? What goes in? I know you made a big matrix. So what do you recommend for those that need to make that decision?
Well, what we did And we found it helpful because there's a lot of hype. Public schools aren't as good as the private schools and that. So we basically did a decision matrix. We took a spreadsheet and we identified all of the things that we felt were important that we needed to get out of the schools and what the schools had to offer. And we compared the two, the schools, and each of those items that we felt were important, we gave them a numerical value. And some of them may have had a range, some of them may have been a fixed value. And then we just, put down the scores for each of these things, totaled them up, and made our decision that way. Now, the first time we looked at it, the public schools actually came out like 1 or 2 points higher. So it wasn't like a big swing, from one to the other. And we decided that that year, because we still had the force of law behind it with the IEPs, we were going to, and the resources, there's a lot more resources.
IEPs.
Individual education plans, yeah.
Okay.
Getting back to the acronyms you mentioned. So we decided, because we had the force of law with the IEP, the school has a lot more resources available. We stayed with the public school. When we were going from elementary school to middle, what we were seeing, we weren't real comfortable with that the public school was going to provide for Ian's needs. So we went with this other private school, and that didn't work out. That just wasn't it wasn't what it was promised to be. And we just felt that we needed to pull Ian out of there and put him in the back to the public schools.
And Sandy, you wanted to add something?
Well, there was an emotional component there too. It wasn't quite as mathematical. We went to the interviews, the private school. We toured the public school, and there were just feelings about it. The private school looked cozy and smaller, and the people seemed loving, and the people were friendly at the public school too, but it just seemed it looked so large and institutional, and there was an emotional component.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. We're speaking with Sandy and Mark Horowitz, and what they've written is, "I Wish I Knew Then What I Know Now, A Guide for Special Needs Parents." On today's Topical Currents, a short break. We'll come back and get some calls and some emails.
You're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Film premieres, gala events, and celebrity guests create an aura of excitement around the 28th annual Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, October 18th through November 11th. Funded in part by Broward Cultural Division, details and tickets at fliff.com. We're funded by listeners like you and by ConservArt, offering professional restoration and conservation of fine art and collectibles for over 50 years. Custom framing and insurance claims handling our specialties. More information is online at conservart.net.
South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center presents District Stage Company's Viva Broadway with special guest John Secada, an evening of musical theater that celebrates Latinos on Broadway, part of the Bring It Home Miami initiative that features South Florida artists who have achieved widespread acclaim, Saturday, October 19th. More information at smdcac.org or 786-573-5300. For over 103 years, the Greater Fort Lauderdale Chamber of Commerce has been committed to being a leader of the South Florida business community, which represents over 500,000 employees in virtually every economic sector. Through its dedicated members, volunteers, and staff, the Greater Fort Lauderdale Chamber is focused on increasing and sustaining jobs, expanding Port Everglades, increasing foreign direct investment, improving transportation systems, and building on the already world-class vacation destination. More information at ftlchamber.com.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Sandy and Mark Horowitz. They've written, "I Wish I Knew Then What I Know Now, A Guide for Special Needs Parents." If you'd like to join in the conversation, the number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. 9576. Sandy, you were saying, and Mark, during the break, that you wanted to go back to when Ian was first diagnosed, because he was misdiagnosed. And
at first, yes, he had an ultrasound that indicated that there may be some hydrocephalus there, and they wanted him to have an MRI. We didn't know any better. We went to the same hospital, local hospital, and had the MRI done there. Well, the results were normal, yet he still was having the symptoms. So we asked for a second opinion, and we learned that radiologists do not do second opinions generally. And that was a big shock, because I knew that needed to be read by someone else. And that's when I got the line from the doctor, oh, do you want your son to be sick? Mm. No, because the doctor, meanwhile, I have to keep in mind, he was trusting me. He had never actually seen this puffy fontanel. I could have been nuts for all he knew. So I had to push for it. I actually found a hospital that had the pediatric radiologist, and I had to call her about six times before I persuaded her to look at the films. And then she said, yeah, his corpus callosum is too thin. She showed me and compared it to another baby.
So a pediatric radiologist is...
Pediatric radiologists are important for a lot of things. Now, of course, you know, if you've got a broken bone sticking out in an emergency, go to the hospital. But if there's something like an MRI, CAT scan, things that you can, you know, need to be done in advance, please find a pediatric radiologist to read them.
Mark, let's talk a little bit about Ian's long-term future. Is he going to be employable? Do you have to set up a trust fund if something would happen to you two?
Yeah, for his, actually, you know, when planning for his future, there's the short term. The first thing we had to do was make a will. And in our will, we had to decide, you know, who would take care of Ian if something was to happen to us. And probably even more importantly is setting up a special needs trust. And with the special needs trust, that money is funneled into there, and it can only be used for actual living expenses. And the importance of that is if in the state of Florida, and actually in other states, in order to qualify for certain government benefits, you can't have more than $2,000 in your name. So he could have been saving birthday presents for the last 10 years or 15 years or whatever, had $2,000 in there, something happened to us, he would not be able to get government assistance if he needed it. So that was the first thing we did on the short-term planning. And in terms of employability, yeah, I think he'll be able to be employed. I don't think he's going to be the tow truck driver that he wants to be. But
at least not right away.
Yeah, at least not right away.
Will he be able to drive?
Well, we're kind of working on that. You know, my professionally, I promote bicycling. And I kept telling him that he needs to learn how to ride a bicycle and how to handle it and understand traffic before he can go on to moving a car. So, yeah, I think he'll be employable. I've been kind of, you know, setting him towards 3D modeling, using the computer, you know, doing graphic things. He just recently told me he wants to learn how to make maps. He wants to do geographic information system mapping. So over the summer, so it doesn't interfere with his homework, we're going to go over how to make maps and do GIS.
What about dietary restrictions? Are there any?
We play with diet a lot. We are currently restricting dairy because we want to see if it makes a difference, not only just with mood and thinking, but also with our skin. We all have some sort of skin issue, and we've read that dairy can affect the skin a lot. I didn't really notice. Actually, we've restricted dairy before, and we did seem to get some good results. But it's hard. These diet things are hard.
Yeah, and where do you go for the information? You know,
there is a lot of information online, and actually in books. The libraries have dairy-free cookbooks, gluten-free cookbooks now. There's a lot now that's out there,
right.
and actual food that tastes good too.
But how do you know that gluten-free or dairy-free, where do you find that's going to help him?
It takes about a month to get dairy molecules out of your body. It takes about 6 months for gluten. So to see if a gluten-free diet is really going to work, you need to be on it for 6-7 months to give it and to see if it starts to improve. Then you've got to realize that healing takes time. That, okay, so now you take away the poison, but then you've got to heal the tissues, give the body time to heal. So it can take a long time on these trials, and sometimes you find out that it's not. With NAET, which you may have read about in the book, some of these diets don't work, but it turns out there's hidden sensitivities that can be, you know, that can be underlying. If you've got some sort of sensitivity to vitamins or something that's underlying, if you take out gluten, you're still going to have the problem if it's something else that's causing it.
Right.
Or in addition to.
Let's take a listener call. This is Woody in Boynton Beach. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
I listened to your program. My grandson is 9 years old. His name is Ian also, and he lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. And he's a 504 student, ADD. And recently, he had a problem. He also goes to private school, believe it or not, MGM. They have a place called Children's Choice, plus public school. And he posted on their computer a YouTube program from Mario Brothers called Black Yoshi. And there was depicting some violence in it. Anyway, one of the teachers picked it up. They're going to expel him from school. They're so sensitive to violence. Now he's nine, and he doesn't know. So what are the posting
on this?
What
is the game that Ian likes to play?
Well,
God, every one of them. He's just unbelievably well versed with all these games, but they're so violent. And it just picks them up on the phones, and it's just terrible. So what to do is the diet. He goes to a doctor, put him on a diet. Pizza diet. My daughter's a single mother, and it's really hard to control them. Not violent. That's just tough.
Okay, let's get a comment here.
I think, you know, my son Ian is in Scouts, and when I watch the typical kids play, they're playing these same violent games, and it's really. I think that the schools are a little bit oversensitive to certain things. Ian, when he was in elementary school, got in trouble for pointing his finger like a gun and going bang, bang. He was playing cops and robbers in the playground. And he got in trouble for that. So I think there might be some oversensitivity to that. But also it may be that, you know, your grandson just doesn't, you know, really, he may not even see the violence as being that violent. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I can't really say.
Can I ask you a question? Do you think he's a violent kid, or is he just attracted?
He's not on the line right now.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Oh, okay. If you really think that the child's violent or it has these tendencies, then really you should seek out help from a psychologist, I would think, a social worker. Even the schools could maybe help put you in touch with a social worker.
So we don't have too much time left. Tell us about the many resources that you want to convey other than your book. I know you have a website. I wish I knew then with all hyphens.
Right. We'll have a link to that on our Facebook page and our website.
But what other resources would you want to share?
There's a lot on Yahoo groups and meetups. Networking is important. It's whether you're doing over the computer or in person, put yourself in situations where you can contact other parents that have these issues, because there's so much that you only find out about through word of mouth.
Yeah. I was going to say, in South Florida, there's in the Yahoo groups, there's a Denise's List. Primarily focuses on Broward, but it's applicable anywhere. We also subscribe to another Yahoo group called Kid Power, which is for parents with kids with mild disabilities. And, you know, If you go to the website, there's a whole chart of resources, a whole table of resources that you can go to.
I wish I knew then.
Yeah, iwishiknewthen.com, all hyphens.
All hyphens. All hyphens. You have to put all those hyphens in, I guess, to get it, right?
Yeah, you do.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you. It's Sandy and Mark Horowitz. And what they've written is I Wish I Knew Then What I Know Now, a guide for special needs parents. Again, their website is iwishiknewthen.com with hyphens in between each of the words. Thanks so much, and the best to Ian, and good best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for
very
having
much.
Us.
Thanks to both of you.
Food and Dining is next.
And this is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. Thanks for joining us. Florida National University is accepting applicants for its Bachelor of Science degree in Nursing, RN to BSN program. Florida National University designed this program to provide online flexibility and professional growth for registered nurses who wish to enhance their careers by earning a Bachelor of Science in Nursing. Florida National University offers classes online or on campus. Academic advisors can be reached at 305-821-3333 or fnu.edu. We're funded by listeners like you and by Auto Direct, committed to making the car and truck leasing process easier, offering all makes and models of vehicles with real quotes right over the phone. Quotes and additional information at theperfectpayment.com and 800-615-1087. We'd like to thank our corporate underwriters, Gable Stage, Temps ASAP, and the Conrad Miami Hotel. These corporate underwriters help bring you the programs you enjoy throughout the year. Please join WLRN in thanking them for their continued support.
The Sybarite 5 String Quintet performs an eclectic repertoire that ranges from Mozart to Radiohead. South Miami-Dade Cultural Arts Center presents the gifted young string musicians in concert on Friday and Saturday, October 18th and 19th. More information at smdcac.org or 786-573-5300.
And we return. It's Thursday's edition of Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. And, of course, it's Thursday, so joining us now is chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. Linda, I'm surprised you're not wearing a Hawaiian shirt, considering today's topic. So Trader Joe's is coming to South Florida. We're going to learn more about it.
Yay.
Right. CEA, it's like a cult following.
I've been waiting for 15 years.
See, well, first it was Whole Foods, then Fresh Market, and now Trader Joe's is coming, another national chain. Because for many years, it was Publix and Winn-Dixie. They were the major players here. But tomorrow, Friday, Trader Joe's is opening up. And here to tell us all about it is Jody McCullough, and she's the store captain. Jody, are you with us? Welcome.
I am. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be on the program.
Well, thank you. I know you are so busy with everything opening up tomorrow. But we'd also love to hear from our listeners.
Yeah.
Do you know about Trader Joe's, or have you been to one elsewhere? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Do we have email today?
We do, radio@WLRN.org.
And Twitter?
At Topical Currents.
Okay, great. Also with us is our favorite wine guy. It's Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. And you can read Fred's wine suggestions from my Dinner Minutes column. And you can also read his wine column that's in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I thought I would talk about wine and Trader Joe's. A very interesting story.
It sure is. Jody's laughing. That story will come up later to be continued. And so Jody McCullough, your store opens tomorrow. You're called the store captain, rather than correct. A manager? What's this all about?
Well, you know, we definitely have a nautical theme here at Trader Joe's. We like to say that, you know, we travel the culinary seas looking for unique products for our stores. So I'm the captain of the ship. I lead the ship.
I see. And then I noticed I was there yesterday, saw the store. It's a magnificent store.
Yes.
You have mates. They're not assistant supervisors, they're mates.
Well, that's correct. You know, I have a group of first mates, you know. They assist me with all of the everyday functions and duties of running a grocery store and running this great ship, Trader Joe's.
Well, you know, you mentioned Trader Joe's, as we just heard Bonnie, and many people, they get so excited. It's mm-hmm. it's almost like a cult following. So tell us a little bit about Trader Joe's, because it's a totally
sure.
different concept
Absolutely.
From what we're used to.
Sure. Well, Trader Joe's is a unique neighborhood grocery store. We sell everything from the exotic to the basics. And when I say basics, I mean your eggs, your milk, butter, flour. 80% of our products are under the Trader Joe's private label. That means it's free of artificial flavors, colors, and preservatives.
So you control all of it.
Sure.
Your ingredients. So what surprised me when I saw it is that, you know, there's no deli counter.
Mm-hmm.
There's no meat counter.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people just sort of pick up and go.
Correct. Yeah, everything comes in prepackaged fresh every single day from our warehouses in the morning. So we get that in first thing in the morning, and then we get it right onto the shelves.
So how would you describe your store? Would you just call it organic, gourmet, moderate price? Where would you put your store?
Sure. You know, we carry a bunch of everything. You know, we do carry organic products, we carry natural products, and we carry conventional products. It's kind of a mixed bag. And, you know, all our products are popular. Otherwise, we wouldn't sell them. Our customers truly have the purchasing power in our stores. They decide what stays on the shelves and you know, what we discontinue.
Okay, so now I brought some here for us to taste, and we're all gorging ourselves.
Yay!
And so what we've got mandarin orange chicken, and we've got some green beans and some brown rice. And I have to tell everyone, I made almost all of it in the microwave.
Oh, wow.
And but I did bake the chicken off in the oven.
Good.
What I love about the microwave part is that there's no pots to wash.
That's
this
right.
is really good.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about what we're eating.
Sure. So that mandarin orange chicken, of course, that's one of the staples in my house, but it's a really popular item at Trader Joe's. We're going to be sampling that on opening weekend, starting at 8 a.m. tomorrow and all through the end of day Saturday. We're going to be sampling that along with our green plant juice, which I think I gave you a gallon of
yes,
that.
Yes, you
yeah?
did. I was a little concerned about drinking this green plant juice. Tell us about it.
Oh, it's wonderful. You know, it's got five different, you know, green plants into this juice, and it's super healthy. It's delicious, and yeah, it looks green, but it tastes like a fruit juice. It's really sweet. It's delicious.
What are the plants?
I always think that it would be a little better with a little hit of rum in it or something.
Hey, is that Frank?
Yeah, that's Fred. You, yeah, Fred Tasker.
Fred, I'm with you, Fred.
What are the five plants?
Well, I believe there's broccoli, spirulina, and then let's see, what are the other three?
Kale?
There? Yeah, there's some kale. I would have to, I don't have it like right in front of me.
There's
that's
a
okay.
lot of different greens.
Let's it's
go to
it's
line,
full of everything.
Let's go to line two, Susan. Susan in Sunrise. Hi, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank
Hi.
You so much for taking my call.
Yes.
I wish so much that Trader Joe's would come to Sunrise. I so desperately miss my Trader Joe's. I moved here from California,
uh-huh.
and I did so much shopping there, and I just miss it so much. Please, please come to Sunrise.
Wait. You are moving up somewhere, aren't you, Jody?
Boca Raton. They're going to be in Boca
right.
Raton, but, you know, Sunrise.
Right. Yeah, Boca is next. Now, where is Sunrise exactly?
We're just west of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, great.
You would love us here.
I know.
Okay. Susan, just keep pleading. Maybe it'll
That's
happen.
Right.
They've got over 400 stores, about 400 now.
Right.
Let's go to line four. Hi, Josie Ann in Miami. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to tell you how much I love Trader Joe's. And I was introduced to Trader Joe's in Boston,
yes.
where my daughter lived for a while.
Uh-huh.
Then she moved to New York.
Uh-huh.
been to San Francisco, and my sister lives in Atlanta, and every trip I make, I go to Trader Joe's.
Yay!
So now, have you paid all these people, Jody? I mean, let's...
Listen, we have been waiting for Trader Joe's to come to Miami, and I just hope you don't run out of products. Honestly. I'm just so glad. I mean, honestly, there's so many things.
Josiane, thank you for your call. But we've got loads of calls coming here. This is amazing. Bonnie, you have an email.
We have an email, which I think Fred will find interesting. It's from Mary. She says, we've hauled cases of $2 chuck back from the Cincinnati store for years. Thank goodness that's over. The gas must have cost us more than the wine. But we love the stuff, so... What is $2
well,
chuck?
Well, he's going to talk about
later on.
Yes. All right. So stay tuned. He's got a whole story about it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mary. Okay. We'll learn what it is.
Let's go to line 5. Hi, Chris. Coral Gables. You're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you for coming to Pinecrest. We're very pleased. I heard you mention that things come fresh every day from your warehouse. Where is your closest warehouse to your Pinecrest store?
Sure. Our closest one is in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
So you're driving, the truck drives every single day from Atlanta down here?
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and the store location, about, for everyone, it's sort of across from Dadeland, near Dadeland there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's a small parking lot. So where are those trucks going to be?
You know, we actually... I'm glad you brought that up because it was mentioned on the news yesterday about parking. Parking is actually not going to be that bad. We have plenty of spaces. We actually expanded our parking spaces since converting this store from the Borders. So we definitely have some more parking options available. Not to mention the crew here, we're not going to be parking on site. You know, we want to make sure our customers are taken care of. So we're leaving the lot entirely available for our customers and for their convenience. And then there's plenty of parking, you know, across at Dayland. And then also, you know, there's a shopping plaza directly to the right of us, south of us on Dixie Highway that, you know, there's a couple hundred parking spaces just over there alone.
All right. Well, I think you're going to be slammed. I think so. Thank you for your call, Chris. What surprised me is, you know, I didn't know a lot about Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, it's kind of a gourmet store, but your prices are very good.
They're wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bonnie, you have somebody there?
Yeah, Erin says, I shopped at Trader Joe's in San Luis Obispo, California, as a poor college student. I love being able to afford gourmet food on a college student's budget and all the great wines for $3 to $5 a bottle. I'm so excited to have them in Florida. I emailed them annually to move here.
Right.
So let me ask you... You mentioned to me that you think your prices are lower than most of them. I mean, I was surprised. I saw spice bottles. Now spices can cost, what, $3 or $4 for a bottle? Bonnie's nodding her head, yes. And yours are what, $1.99?
$1.99, absolutely.
Now, what quality are they? How do you keep up your quality at those prices?
They're very high quality. Well, you know, our buying philosophy is unique. You know, we buy direct from our manufacturers, and that avoids the middleman. And in doing this directly passes the savings on to our customers.
The other thing you have that's great that isn't that expensive is coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The coffees are incredible.
But do you have national brand products there as well? I mean,
we do carry some national brands, but, you know, 80% of our products are private label. And, you know, like I showed you yesterday when I got to take you on a little tour of the store, even in the cereal section, you know, we do carry a couple national brands, you know, Barbara's, for instance, Kashi. But, you know, 30 cereals in our cereal section are under $2.
And they're huge boxes. That surprised
me. Exactly.
And your coffee is Trader Joe's coffee?
We have Trader Joe's coffees. Mm-hmm. Wow. Absolutely.
And the
great
beans.
Quality.
Yeah.
Well, I know, Jody, that you are very, very busy, and I appreciate you taking the time. And you're going to have to leave us now because you're going to get ready for a great crowd tomorrow.
Yes. Well, I just can't thank you enough for having Trader Joe's on your program. We are really excited to meet all of our neighbors here in Pinecrest and South Florida. It's just been a pleasure, and the embrace has been so kind and warm. So I just can't thank everyone enough in this beautiful city.
Well, great. We'll be coming to see you.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest has been Jody McCullough. She's the new Trader Joe's store captain. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with more.
And you're listening to Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys, 91.5 WKWM. Bailey Hall, located on the Broward College campus in Davie, presents Chicago's iconic improvisational comedy troupe, Second City, in Happily Ever Laughter, on Thursday, October 24th at 8 p.m. Tickets and information at baileyhall.org. The disease of addiction doesn't discriminate based on age or status. Comprehensive addiction treatment and recovery offered for older adults and baby boomers at Hanley Center. 855-718-2233. Hanley Center Recovery for Life. We're funded by listeners like you and by Best Roofing, hosting the Trunk or Treat Extravaganza this Saturday, inviting families to a safe trick-or-treat event at Best Roofing, 1600 Northeast 12th Terrace, Fort Lauderdale, benefiting Pantry of Broward.
You can discover the mystery and marvel behind our nation's most celebrated comic book superheroes when Young and Art Museum presents Zap, Pow, Bam, the superhero, the golden age of comic books, 1938 to 1950, a national traveling exhibition now through Sunday, January 5th, 2014. Zap, Pow, Bam explores the origin and popularity of beloved icons, including Superman, Batman, Captain Marvel, Wonder Woman, and Captain America. Details at youngandartmuseum.org.
And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Our guest was Jody McCullough. She's the new Trader Joe's store captain. And she's been telling us all about South Florida's newest supermarket entry here. And it's in Pinecrest, the new Trader Joe's. It opens tomorrow, Friday. She gave us some great tips and told us about the store. And she had to leave us because she's really, really busy.
Where is it? It's the old Borders?
It's the old Borders. Okay. It's on US 1. It's kind of opposite Shorty's.
Oh, okay.
And for those people who, this amazes me. People tell me that there's a Trader Joe's in Naples that they would drive over to Naples, fill up their trunk with Trader Joe's.
Actually, if it's that close to Shorty's, you could probably take Metrorail down there.
I'm sure you could. That'd probably be a better idea tomorrow.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. Now it's dinner in minutes time. And so for those nights that you're going to make a quick and easy dinner, and this one only takes 20 minutes, and it's a roast pork with hot pepper succotash. It's it's kind of an autumn dish. The pork tenderloin is coated with some dry rub, and I use some ground cumin and coriander and some cayenne pepper and a little brown sugar. And here's a tip for everybody. If your spices are more than 6 months old, it's time for new ones. It's sort of hard to throw away that whole bottle of spice, but now you can go get one at Trader Joe's for $1.99.
But Linda, you're doing another spicy dish. I'm proud of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just for you, Fred, as always.
I appreciate that.
Yes, good. Well, anyway, this pork broils in about 15 minutes, and my secret is that I butterfly it, the tenderloin. You cut it almost in half lengthwise, and you open it like a book. And just make sure your broiler is hot and ready to go, and it'll take about 10 minutes. On one side, turn it over, 5 minutes on the other side, and it's done. Now, there's a new guideline for pork these days. It's 145 degrees, and it's finished. And while that pork is cooking, you can make your hot pepper succotash. Just warm some chicken broth, a little canola oil in a skillet, and I added some frozen corn kernels and lima beans. Sauté it 5 minutes, and here's the secret, hot pepper jelly. Just fold it into the vegetables, and it's done. So that complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer.
Is 145 degrees, is that up or down? I mean, did they raise the level?
Oh, I didn't know what you meant by up or down. they lowered it. It was 165, I think it was. And the USDA,
quite a difference.
Yeah, the USDA, because people are afraid to have pink pork.
Yeah, he's worried about trichinosis.
But apparently, it doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. So the USDA lowered that. So you can have nice, juicy pork. It doesn't have to be dried out like sawdust. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, you can't really talk about Trader Joe's without talking about its most famous wine, and that's the infamous Two Buck Chuck. And what this is, it's a line of wines. It's Cabernet, Chardonnay, Merlot, Sauvignon Blanc, that sort of thing. They got the nickname because they sold exclusively through Trader Joe's in California for $1.99 a bottle and for under $3 in other states. And what's interesting is that a couple of the Two Buck Chuck wines scandalized the wine judging world recently by winning top awards in professional blind tastings, beating out some other wines that sold for as much as $50.
So this Two Buck Chuck did win some awards?
It did, and there was a certain amount of embarrassment on the part of some judges, although, as you see, they didn't really back down either. It's an interesting story. The name Chuck came from Charles Shaw, who was an investment banker who started a winery in California in the 80s and didn't do very well, and eventually he sold it to the Bronco Wine Company under owner Fred Franzia. You might recognize the Franzia name. And Bronco specializes in inexpensive wines with names like Red Truck and Napa Ridge, Crane Lake, and that sort of thing. And then in about the year 2000, Bronco decided to put out a line of wines called Charles Shaw at $1.99 in California and a little bit higher in other states because of distribution costs and that sort of thing. So wine fans quickly dubbed it Two Buck Chuck, and it got very popular. The secret, according to Bronco, was that the company owned 45,000 acres of grapes, so they had economies of scale. But Wine Spectator magazine also said there was a huge glut of wine in California in those days, and that let Bronco buy bulk wines at very low prices. So I think there may be
they
a
don't
little
make
both
the
in that.
They don't grow the grapes, are you saying?
In some cases they do, and some they don't. They make a lot of this stuff.
Have you tasted it, Fred?
I haven't, no. I've got to try it sometime, but I just haven't had a chance because, Trader Joe's wasn't in Miami for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, the wine fans loved it, especially during the recent recession, and it quickly zoomed to 5 million cases a year just through Trader Joe's. It's amazing.
Trader Joe's sold 5 million cases of wine a year?
Yeah, well, they got. You said I think they have 400 stores, so even then, that's a lot of wine.
That's a lot of wine.
But of course, the question is, how good is Two Buck Chuck? And as I said, I've never tasted it myself. Wine Spectator critic James Lauby called it nothing to write home about, but he did say that he could understand its appeal in the recent recession. And then here's the interesting part. In 2004, Two Buck Chuck made big news when its Shiraz beat out 23 other wines to win a double gold medal in a professional California wine tasting, the Eastern International Wine Competition. And the next year, its wine won the best Chardonnay of California at the California State Fair Wine Competition. This is really the big wine competition.
So they have all types of wines, from Cabernet to Chardonnay to Pinot Noir, is that correct?
Yeah, they make several different kinds of wine. Full disclosure, I was not a part of either judging. But one of the judges, a man I know, called the winning wine a fresh, fruity, well-balanced Chardonnay that people and wine judges, although maybe not wine critics, will like. So recently, Two Buck Chuck raised its prices a bit because of inflation and that sort of thing. So some people are now calling it Three Buck Chuck. And unfortunately, Jody is gone now. I wanted to ask her whether they have these wines in their store here. I presume they do.
Well, I have to tell you. Yeah, go ahead.
And now how much they charge for them.
I can't remember exactly, but it's between $1.99 and $2.99 for the bottles. And their store is filled. They have it's a small store as far as supermarkets go. I mean, you can get in and out quickly. And a whole section of the store is wine. I mean, huge section. It's all their different wines are there.
Well, let's ask the listeners to go and get a bottle and taste it and call in next week and tell us what they think.
Yeah. Good idea.
That's a great idea. Because the other thing is she sent me home with some desserts, too. I mean, you could pick up a whole thing, but it's already prepared. It's all in packages, very clearly marked as to how to use it and how to heat it and warm it and that kind of thing. And I was just amazed that a huge piece of brie was $3. From France.
Gee, I wonder how much of a challenge this will be for the established supermarkets around Miami.
We'll find out. Well, it's been really another very tasty week. And we want to thank Jody for being with us. And she's had to leave us because the store opens in Pinecrest, Trader Joe's, tomorrow, Friday, the 18th of October. Next week, we're going to be talking with Dr. Arthur Agaston. Now, some of you may know him as the South Beach Diet Doctor. Now, he has a new book out, and it's called The Gluten Solution. And they've apparently done some studies and really understand that there is a gluten intolerance for many people. It's not just a fad that I thought it perhaps it was. He'll tell us about the new gluten intolerance findings next week. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.
And thanks for tuning in. Our producer is Richard Ikes. Technical direction by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is the online producer. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. We return Monday with the latest news about the treatment of multiple myeloma, a cancer which attacks bone structure. It's most common in men and more frequent in African Americans. We have free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website, WLRN.org. More information as well at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Remember, Linda's recipe is at dinnerinminutes.com. And to the calendar, on this day in 1920, 93 years ago, the birth of actor Montgomery Clift in Omaha. He died of a heart attack at age 45. A Place in the Sun, From Here to Eternity, and Judgment at Nuremberg. And on this day in 1931, 82 years ago, gangster Al Capone gets 11 years at Alcatraz for tax evasion. It was the only charge that could stick. One more before we head for North Beach. On this day in 1989, 24 years ago, a deadly San Andreas Fault earthquake strikes San Francisco. 7.1 on the Richter scale. Millions witnessed it on live TV during the World Series game. '63 died. So we leave with a thought from Alphonse Gabriel Capone, whose business card said he was a furniture salesman. Quote, "I am going to St. Petersburg, Florida tomorrow. Let the worthy citizens of Chicago get their liquor the best they can. I'm sick of the job. It's a thankless one and full of grief." He inflicted some grief himself. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Next up, it's Here and Now from NPR News.
This is 91.